From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now. Coming up, the July jobs report is out. We will look at that and whether there is a clear link between unemployment and crime.
But first, the ceasefire has blown up. Israel and Hamas trading fire again today. The ceasefire was supposed to start this morning and last for 72 hours. It ended after about 90 minutes when the two sides in this war clashed near the southern Gaza town of Rafah on Gaza's border with Egypt. Yigal Palmore is a spokesman for Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. On the BBC today, he said this.
There was a full-scale attack on an Israeli unit, and this unit had to respond. After it has responded, Hamas started firing rockets on Israeli territory again, and therefore the fighting resumed all along the line.
Hamas, on the other hand, said Israel shot first and said Israel's announcement that one of its soldiers had been captured by Hamas was made to cover up the killing of dozens of Palestinian civilians. Nick Childs is the BBC's World Affairs correspondent. He's in London. Nick, what is true?
Robin, it's very difficult to get to the ground truth on this immediately, but clearly part of the ground truth must be that this ceasefire, which was always going to be very fragile, partly because of the nature of the conflict itself, but also partly because of the nature of the ceasefire agreement, that it would allow, to some extent, some limited operations, supposedly by Israel. It certainly would have Israelis and Hamas still very much eyeball to eyeball, has meant that it didn't have much of a shelf life, and it will be very difficult to reinstate it. But what we know beyond the bare facts on the Israeli side, which we just heard, is that the Israelis say essentially they were seeking out further tunnels, which they say they were allowed to do under the ceasefire, and they were attacked by Hamas. And in the course of that attack, which included apparently a suicide bomber, two Israeli soldiers were killed, and it seems an Israeli soldier was also abducted. Hamas says Israel breached the ceasefire because they attacked a number of homes, and they say that the death toll on the Palestinian side from the results of that and the fighting already now is in the region of 40 plus, maybe 50 plus. Mm. So that fact, plus the apparent abduction of the soldier, I think mean that, it, in spite of no doubt huge efforts now underway, it is going to be very difficult to bring calm again very quickly.
Well, even before the fighting in Rafah on the border with Egypt, Hamas leaders were saying they didn't agree with Israel's conclusion that they could do defensive fighting. In other words, they could still be blowing up these tunnels. Hamas says that was not a part of the agreement they had signed on to. So there was even disagreement before the fighting in Rafah. And just comment on that for a moment, if you can. We know that there's a border crossing between Gaza and Egypt at that point in Rafah, but Gazans, Palestinians have complained that with new Egyptian leadership, they haven't been able to cross as much. What does the new leadership in Egypt and potentially this fighting in Rafah, what do you see significance there?
I think it is significant in terms of the difficulties in trying to bring peace again, either in a temporary sense for humanitarian reasons, and particularly in a longer term sense in terms of a lasting ceasefire and a lasting peace. Simply the fact that the Middle East has changed dramatically in the last year or two compared to previous flare-ups between Israel and the Palestinians, and particularly Hamas in Gaza. And yes, the fact that the previous Egyptian administration was more sympathetic to Hamas. Now the current one is seen very much less sympathetic and indeed hostile. And also that there are, you know, new vested interests and differences of opinion within the Arab world all complicate the attempts, if you like, to influence Hamas. They also add to the concerns in the region and beyond about the potential fallout from all this in what remains an even more volatile region right now than it has been for some time.
Well, and just staying in the region for a minute, Saudi Arabia just called Israel's actions state-sponsored terrorism. But on the other hand, back to Rafah, do you think that there's been some sort of tacit agreement from Egypt that Israel could attack the tunnels there?
I think that's very difficult to say at this stage. And one has to remember that, in actual fact, part of what it had been hoped was going to be the most significant truce so far, leading to actual talks with the two sides, at least indirectly, for a more lasting truce, have come about not just through the efforts of the United States, US Secretary of State John Kerry and the United Nations, but also, it seems, the influence of people like the Egyptians, like the Turkish government, it's also said, and the Gulf state of Qatar. But clearly, part of the problem in some ways in all of this is that there seem to be fewer mediators that can talk to both sides now than there have been even in the past. And there are new frictions now compared to in the past at the diplomatic level. You have an Egypt which is clearly less sympathetic to Hamas. You also have on the other side clear signs that there have been huge renewed tensions between the Obama administration and the Israeli government over how to handle getting out of this crisis as well.
The BBC's World Affairs correspondent Nick Childs in London. Nick, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.